The other area, interestingly, that he had under his control was that of the lives of resident aliens. The people from other Greek states who had come to live in Athens who could not acquire Athenian citizenship, you could not be naturalised under normal conditions, only under exceptional conditions, but it was possible to get the ancient equivalent of a green card and to be able to reside in Athens. If you did so, however, you were always considered an outsider. You were known as a metic. And these metics, these neighbours, if you will, these resident aliens, were subject to a different rate of taxation, naturally a higher rate of taxation, and were also subject to military service on behalf of the Athenians. So all legal matters involving, say, a dispute between a metic and a citizen would be adjudicated finally by the polemarch. Now, these are only the top three. I've given most detail here because they are by far the most important. But from Aristotle's work, The Constitution of Athens, the Athenaion Politeia, as it's called in Greek, we actually know of dozens, if not hundreds, of minor officials newly elected every year. Like these three archons, every one of these minor officials serves for only a year and then must be replaced by someone else from the Athenian citizen body. There are overseers down in the market who go around making sure that the weights and measures being used by traders and bankers are fair and legal. There are revenue collectors, of course, in the Piraeus and also in the Agora of Athens, who are there to collect the tax being received by the state for transactions. There are officials in charge of public contracts. The land of Athens, where there were rich silver veins, would be worked by people who contracted to the state to do it and to pay them a certain amount. These contracts had to be managed by state officials. And all of these are chosen by lot, elected from the whole citizen body for 1 year. So again, these same principles, collegiality, rotation, annuality, built into every level of the bureaucracy of ancient Athens. The glory, however, in the eyes of many Athenians of their democracy was not in these magistracies, not in the boule, not even necessarily in the assembly. In the popular mind of the 5th century Athenians, the glory of their democracy lay in the law courts. These law courts were under the control of six judges, the Thesmothetae, as they were called by the Athenians. But these judges, unlike judges in our system, certainly unlike judges, say, on the Supreme Court, exercised very little direct power. They were essentially there to administer the day-to-day running of the court and to make sure that a proper judicial procedure was followed. But all final power of decision-making lay with the juries. Now, when I say jury, what may spring into your head is a film like 12 Angry Men. You may have served on a jury and been impaneled with 11 other people. The Athenians would laugh at you. The idea of a jury of 12 people is ludicrous. For them, the smallest jury was 501, and that's for minor private cases. More important public cases involving, say, peculation by a public official would be judged by a panel of 1,001 jurors. And in a really major case, and if we think about the possibility, for example, of impeachment proceedings that may be looming in our future here, the Athenian response for such a major issue, unconstitutional behaviour or treason, these kinds of things, these would be entrusted by the Athenians to a panel of 1,501 citizens. So once again, we see in the empanelling of these juries a strong commitment to the idea of diluting power from individuals through as broad a spectrum of society as possible. The selection of these jury panels lay with the Thesmothetae. They actually administered the selection of the juries. But, of course, all final decisions were with the jury, who voted by secret ballot. Here I have to tell you a story that does not redound to my credit, but I'll tell you anyway. The system of voting was managed in Athens, secret voting, by giving the voters small pieces of discs, if you will, that had little columns running through them, which could be held by the fingertips so that you could not see whether the metal piece running through the disc was hollow or solid. If you hold them by your fingertips, you cover the ends and you can't see whether they're hollow or solid. You then, as you're leaving, vote by putting one into one urn, that's the voting urn, and then you put your reject in the other. And as long as you keep your fingers over the end, nobody will know whether you voted for acquittal or for finding the person guilty. I had a couple of these a few years ago, which I showed to a classroom of grade 7 children, and I made the fatal mistake of telling a lie in the classroom, which I promise I will never do again as long as I live. The children said to me, "Are these authentic?" They weren't. I'd bought them in Athens in a tourist shop, but they had written on one side, "Psiphos Dimosia," popular vote, and so, you know, this was written in Greek, and the kids had thought they were authentic. And I told a lie. When the kid asked me, I said, "Yes, they are." And the kid then said, "How come it then says on the back, made in Greece?" Written in English.